All right, Rabosai, good morning. Let's begin. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Aleph. We are 91. We are picking up on Tzadik on Beis 90B, about five lines up from the bottom. Also, we do not yet, we have a sponsor for today's shiur. We do not yet have a sponsor for the breakfast. If you would like to sponsor the breakfast, you can see Said or Ari, an incredible zchus. Not only do you get the zchus of the Talmud Torah, but also you get the zchus of the Alanisim b'mei Matisyo in benching. It's a real value package for your sponsorship. Besides the fact that you managed to get the opportunity to be mezakeh Talmud Torah, again, you could see Ari, you could see Said. Partial sponsorships are accepted as well. So if you'd like to be mishtat, I'm sorry. Oh, half of the breakfast is sponsored by the Lerner Mishpacha. Other half is sponsored by the Nachman Mishpacha. Yasher Koyach, in honor of? Oh, I got nervous about the birth. You got me nervous about the day. And all right, good. The birth of the granddaughter, Baruch Hashem, of Sarah Leah Berglass. Baruch Hashem, she should be zocha, mirza Hashem, to grow, to be a true Bas Yisrael, she should be zocha, to see you go to chuppah, to Torah, to chuppah, to masim tovim. And by the Nachman's, in honor of? And from the Nachman family, the Zchus of Rafu Shalima for Atamar Adina Baskena Shulamis. We thank our sponsors and we hope that together Tamar Adina with Kol Kol Yisrael shall have a complete and enduring refuah. Shkoyach. I was just also before we begin, I'll send out a more formal message as well, but I just really want to say on behalf of my wife and myself an incredible thank you for the very special and exceptionally generous Hanukkah gift. We truly appreciate the incredible kindness and Torah from all of you. It's as big as I always say, it's a big zuchus to be able to come to learn with all of you this morning. The gifts are absolutely unnecessary, but that was truly and absolutely heartwarming to see that beautiful Tova. Thank you. I'll send out a more formal message later, but thank you. So let's begin. Itmar, chasma b'kol v'hinicha b'kol. So v'hinicha b'kol. So now we get into an interesting discussion here. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. And again, our shiur this morning is sponsored by Baruch Vishal and Sonia Kozlovsky in the zchus of the birth of their granddaughter, Liana Levia Bas Yaakov Daniel, born to their children, Hinda and Jacob Rosen. We hope that in the merit of... Rosen. I think it was originally Rosen, but they must have changed it at some point. Right, so again, and really with great happiness for the gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shebizoch HaMeretz Hashem, to see her grow to be a true Bas Yisrael, Achnis LaTorah L'Chuppah, U'Lemasim Tovim. And of course, it should be an aliyah for the neshama of Baruch Fishel's father, who is the baby's namesake. Halavai she continue to have nachas from his beautiful mishpacha. All right, well, so let's begin. Itmar chosma b'kol v'nhigo b'kol. So if you went ahead and what happens if you muzzled the animal b'kol with your voice, or in the case of kilayim, you let it b'kol. Now, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says chosma b'kol kishaisa shocha le'achol hayagorba. So remember, we discussed this already yesterday, the idea that about cases of where you effectively end up muzzling the animal without actively muzzling the animal. So you go ahead and you preclude the animal from eating, but without actually going ahead and doing anything to prevent. So in this case over here, the animal is about to eat, and every single time the animal is about to eat, I yell at it. So that effectively goes ahead and muzzles the animal. Or for that matter, a person goes ahead, Rashi says, what happens if you have, let's say, a shor and a chamor, an ox and a donkey together? So one is not permitted to hitch those two animals up to the same yoke together. Let's say I don't hook them up to the same yoke, but I effectively yell at them and they move together and plow together. So I'm plowing bikilayim together. I'm effectively muzzling. Again, I'm muzzling with my kol. What's the halacha? So the Gemara is really asking Rabosai is the din of chasima, is the din of muzzling an animal, dafka a din, where I actively muzzle the animal? Or do we say any time that as a result of my intervention, the animal is not eating, that is effectively muzzling? So what's the halacha? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chai, Rabbi Yochanan says, Yerchayiv. And again, we'll leave aside kilayim right now, we'll focus on the muzzling. Rabbi Yochanan says that if chasma b'kol, you will be chayiv. Rish Lakish says you are chayiv. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chai, Rabbi Yochanan says you're chayiv. Why? Akimas pev hav yemaisa. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, we'll say an utterance, that the act of speech, by definition, is a maisa. Rish Lakish Amar Rish Lakish says, kala lo havi maisa. Rish Lakish says, no, kol, by definition, just using your voice is not a maisa, and therefore, again, you can't be chayiv for chasima. So we'll say, in the fundamental machlokes, I am not actively muzzling the animal, but rather, again, I'm using my kol to effectively muzzle the animal. I'm using my kol to go ahead and prevent the animal from eating. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the use of your kol is a maisa, therefore you'll be chayiv. Reish Lakish will say, the use of your kol is not a maisa, and therefore you will be potter. It is not that a person should engage in the act of tamura, but if you did go ahead and you did tamura, which we'll explain in just a moment, you are in violation and you get 40 malkis. Now we'll say, now what is this talking about? Look at Rashi. Lo sha'adim rashi lahamir. Reisha demasnisa ha'kom amir in echad noshim ve'echad noshim. Mefarish fa'azil, da'ai kom amir in lo sha'adim rashi lahamir, elo yesh ben koch. So we'll say, what the Gemara is picking up over here is the following. The Mishnah makes a statement of ha'kom amirin. Everyone can commit tamura. Now remember, the act of tamura is when you go ahead and you designate a particular animal as a karbon, and then you swap out that animal for another. The act of swapping is called tamura. So the Lashon of the Mishnah is hakom mamirin. Now one can understand that hakom mamirin literally means everyone can do tamura, like it's an encouragement, to which the Gemara says, no, we're not encouraging anyone to do tamura. Rather, what we are saying is that in the event that someone did do tamura, they are in violation, and they get 40 malkus. Rashi says over here, v'safik esar boim, mishum lo yachlifenu. V'ahachad dibedibar ba'amahu v'loki, ama kimas asayim sha'adam magi b'sasam ma'isa. So we'll say, Rabbi Yochanan is bringing this down, because Rabbi Yochanan is saying the following. What do you learn from tamura? From tamura you learn that anything, that something that you do just with your mouth, something you do just with an utterance, is in fact, or is the equivalent of a maisa, is the equivalent of an action. Where do we see this? Because we'll say, what is the act of tamura? The act of tamura is, I designated a particular animal as a karbon, now I am verbally designated another animal as a karbon, and what happens? That secondary designation has halachic impact, so you see from here that even speech is meaningful. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan will say, just like speech is meaningful by tamura, speech will be meaningful by the act of muzzling as well. And therefore, again, if you effectively prevent the animal from eating by yelling at it, then what? You are, in fact, in violation of tamura. To which the Gemara says, Amar lei haman, Rabbi Yehudihi, damar lav shein b'maisa lo kin alav. To which the Gemara says, not a good raya, why? Because who says that one will be chayiv, ultimately, again, for tamura and for other verbal acts? So that's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion that says that you can get malchus even for a lav shein b'maisa, even for a prohibition that does not have an associated action. Umimat is mugmas like Rabbi Yehuda. The Rebbe says, is that true? Can you actually establish this like Rabbi Yehuda? V'hakatani reisha, but look at the beginning of that braisa, or that Mishnah. Hakom amirin echad ha'anoshim ve'echad ha'anoshim. Remember, the Mishnah said everyone could commit tamura, a man or a woman. To which the Gemara asks, v'havinan ba, hakol asuye mai. What does hakol come to include? To which the Gemara answers, la'asuye yoresh utulok Rabbi Yehuda. The Rebbe says, comes to include a yoresh. What does yoresh mean? An inheritor. Not like Rabbi Yehuda. What does this mean? Take a look. It says in Gemara, Dik Rabbi Yehuda Omar Yoresh Eino Mamir Yoresh Eino Somech. Because we'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Lasuya Yoresh. This is an interesting case. Shem Himir Bakarban Aviv La'achar Misas Aviv Mumar. We'll say what this means is the following. In the event, let's say a father goes ahead and designates Reuven, right? A father goes ahead and designates an animal as a karban. Then what happens? The father dies. So the son inherits, and the son obviously has an obligation to go ahead and still offer this sacrificial animal. So says the Gemara the following. What happens if the son commits tamura? So normally we say that hakol comes to include that even a yoresh, even a child who inherits an animal, could go ahead and commit tamura with that animal. Rabbi Yehuda holds that a yoresh cannot commit tamura, the same way that a yoresh can also not go ahead and do smicha. Smicha is the act of leaning on the animal, which is a din in the bailim. So says the Gemara, you can't tell me that this is like Rabbi Yehuda, because again, at the end of the... See, what the Gemara wanted to suggest is the following. The fact that someone could be in violation of tamura, perhaps that's only in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that what? That a lav she'in b'maisa Maisa, that a prohibition that does not have an associated physical act, you still get Malkus for it. To which the Gemara says, no, this can't be like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because Akol comes to include Yoresh, and Rabbi Yehuda holds that a Yoresh is not subject to the laws of Temura, and a Yoresh can't do and the Yoresh can't do smicha. Therefore, you can't go ahead and just set up this Mishnah dealing with Rabbi Yehuda. Rather, it has to be Ledivrei HaKol. And the point that Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here is that what? You see that even a verbal act is the halachic equivalent of an actual maisa. Therefore, looping all the way back, we would say that even if you are just commit an act of chasim, of muzzling your animal, verbally, meaning that you go out and you yell at the animal every single time it's about to eat, preventing it from eating, that you should be chayav like that as well. To which the Gemara answers, Hai Tana, Savarle Kavase Bechadel Pligale Bechadel. It could very well be that the Tana of the Mishnah, by Temura, holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one case, but doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda in the other case. Fine. So says the Gemara. Tana Rabbanu. So first, before we go on, I just want to give a very special thank you to Saeed. Saeed. Every single time we want to do something, if he's lucky, I give him like 2 hours notice. That's like a large window. But Mamish, like, incredible. On a day when everybody else gets to sleep in a little bit, he's here in the shore to say thank you very much. Thank you. Incredible model in selfless devotion to Kehila. Shkoyach. So says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Hachosim es hapara v'dashba, loke umshalim dalet kabin lapara v'gimel kabin l'chamar. So both says, now the Gemara brings down another braisa. Just by the way, you should know, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, the machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokesh, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore if you verbally muzzle an animal, you will be chayiv for chasima. So therefore again, if you go out and you yell at the animal to prevent it from going ahead and eating, you will in fact be in violation of losach som shar b'disho. Finally, Gemara goes right to Tan Rabbanan. Hachosim es hapara v'dashba. If one goes out and muzzles an animal and then threshes with it, loke umeshalim dalet kabin lepara, v'gimel kabin lechamor. So we'll say you get malchus. In other words, you get malchus because you're in violation of a biblical prohibition of losachsom of muzzling. Plus, you have to also pay four kav of produce for a cow, and 3 kav of produce for a chamor, for a donkey. Now, what's the chap over here? So the idea over here is, I have to pay the owner of the animal. Why? Because I prevented the animal from eating. Had the animal eaten during threshing, the owner of the animal would have saved this amount of money. So not only do I get malchus, but I also have to pay the owner of the animal for the amount of food that the animal would have normally consumed. Says Gemara, but 1 second. Vaha eno loke umes, veno loke mashan. We'll say we generally have a principle that says that you don't get malchus and another punishment. In other words, either you get malchus or a death penalty, or you get malchus or you pay. You don't generally get both of these punishments. How could we see over here that here this individual is going to get malchus as well as going to have to pay? That was easy. So the Gemara says, well, this price is going in accordance to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir holds you can get malchus as well as have to pay. Rava Amar, Rava says, es non asra Torah, v'afilu bal imo. Rava says, but 1 second, we have precedent ultimately again for both payment as well as other prohibitions. Where do we see this, Rav Osai? By the case of es non zona. What's the case of es non? Take a look at Rashi. Rava Amar Esnan Asra Torah Filu Balimo Vinasan La Tala Be Esnan Zaz. Well, let's listen to this case. A man engages in an act of incest with his mother. But he engages in an act of incest with his mother. But he also goes ahead and promises her payment for her services. So we'll say, so what's the halacha in such a situation like this? Vinasan La Tala Be Esnan. So he promises her ultimately a sheep for her services. The aser the carbon. So we'll say the halacha is esnanu. So this is considered to be an esnan zona. Remember, the halacha of esnan zona is that if a man gives a woman a sheep for payment for her services, the halacha is such a sheep cannot be offered up as a carbon. So in this case over here, a man has relations with his mother, promises her an esnan, and promises her the sheep as a payment. The halacha is that sheep
has the designation of an esnan zona, and therefore cannot be brought as a carbon. Va'asal a carbon. The esnan, I'm reading Rashi. The esnan stomach siv, loshna ima, v'loshna pnuya. That both say, because why? The Gemara darshins, because the Torah just prohibits any esnan. It doesn't matter if it's an esnan given to one's mother, or an esnan given to another zona. Va'af agav, di tavale bedina kamon. Teini esnani. Even if, let's say this mother were to bring her son to Beis Din, what would be the claim? My son promised me the sheep for my services and he didn't pay up. Now in Beis Din, that would be an unenforceable claim. Why? Because the son is subject to the death penalty for having engaged in an act of incest. So because he is liable to a death penalty, therefore what? Beis Din cannot enforce a monetary claim. Nevertheless, Rabbi said, even though this is an unenforceable claim in Beis Din, ki yahavi nehele esnanhu. But nevertheless, if the son does give his mother the sheep, that sheep has the designation as an esnan zona. Alma, afilu b'makom misa, nami ramu tashlumin alei. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that even in a situation where the son will be chayiv a death penalty, the financial liability still remains. Elo shein koach la'ansho b'shtayim. But rather, what do you see about? Say, what the Gemara is pointing out here is something very interesting. That essentially in halacha, you could have a monetary claim upon you. The just difference is what? It's an unenforceable monetary claim. So in this case over here, a son engages in an act of incest with his mother, and he promises her a sheep for her services. So what's the halacha? The halacha is the act of incest. He is chayiv misa. He's also chayiv to go ahead and pay her the sheep. He's also chayiv to pay the sheep. Just the difference over here is that because he's liable to a death penalty, the financial claim of the sheep is unenforceable. But just because it's unenforceable doesn't mean that it's not a valid legal claim. How do we see that it's a valid legal claim? That if he does give her the sheep, right, what's the halacha? That sheep cannot be offered up as a carbon. See, Rabbi said, what the Gemara is pointing out is the following. If it truly was an if there truly was no financial claim, then what? When he gives her the sheep, what should be the status of the sheep? It's a matana. If it's a matana, could the mother offer it up as a carbon? Absolutely. The fact that she cannot offer it up as a carbon indicates to us that although the monetary claim is unenforceable, nevertheless, the monetary claim is there. What do you see from there? You see from there that even in cases of misa, there is still a monetary claim, just albeit an unenforceable monetary claim. So says the Gemara. So Rava says, you see over here, the point over here is, you see over here that Lamaisa, again, there can be a monetary claim, even in a case of Misa. It's just the monetary claim is unenforceable. Let's just finish the Rashi. Rashi says, therefore, even in a case of Misa, there will still be an obligation of repayment. But we have a technical issue that you can't impose two penalties on one person. But indeed, you see that you are not yotzei your heavenly responsibilities until you actually pay up your debt. Because if there were not an obligation of repayment, therefore, again, kiyam nehile, when he gives her the esnan, mihava esnan, why should it be an esnan? Matana ba'almohu diyoivle. So, v'gabechosei nami tashumen rama alei, ela she'en koach be'bezden la'onsho shtayim. V'cheivu drama tashumen, I'm reading Rashi, lo yotzei dechavasa ad she'eshayim. We'll say, watch this. So, says the following. Remember, let's go back for just a moment. What's our problem here? Our problem is that we have a braisa that says that if I go ahead and I borrowed an ox and I'm threshing with that ox and I muzzled the ox during threshing, there are two forms of liability. Number one, I'm chayif, ultimately a prohibition for muzzling the ox. That's number one. Number two, I'm chayif for what? I'm chayif for the amount of food that I deprived the animal from. To which the Gemara asks, how can you be chayif both of those things? We generally have a concept of lo ke'eno mashalim. If you're getting malchus, then what? Then you don't have to pay. To which the Gemara so far gave two answers. Answer number one is, it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds lo ke'eno mashalim. Answer number two, says the Gemara, says Rava, no. Even not according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbosai, it could be what the Bryce is saying is the following. If I go ahead and I thresh with a muzzled ox, I'm chayif two things. What are the two things? Number one, I'm chayif ultimately, again, the prohibition of muzzling the ox. Number two, I'm chayif for the dalid, for the amount of money, for the amount of food I deprive the animal from. Now again, is that second claim an enforceable claim? The answer will be no. It's not enforceable. Meaning, if the owner of the cow wants to take me to Beis Din and say, hey, you owe me 4 kav of produce, that is not an enforceable claim. But, just understand, klape shmaya, meaning, it's my heavenly responsibility, I have to pay that amount of money if I want to be totally honest, if I want to totally settle the claim. Rav Papa says, not killing Ramine. Both say, killing Ramine, in other words, in general, when we say, Eino Lokio Mishalim, that's only when there's simultaneity. When both liabilities occur at once. Here in this case, both liabilities are not occurring at once. From the time you take possession of the animal, you become chayiv in its mizonos. But in fact, I am not chayiv ultimately from malchus for muzzling it until the time that I actually muzzle it. So therefore, again, because there's no simultaneity, I will be chayiv both alav for the muzzling, as well as the 3 or 4 kav for depriving the animal of its food. Amar Papa, hani mili ba'amine debe Rav Papa Baraba. So Rav Papa says, there were questions that were asked of me from the yeshiva of Rav Papa Baraba. Upashti lehu li'isura. And I answered both of them li'isur. Chad kilchasa v'chad lo kilchasa. Well, this is very interesting. They asked me 2 shailas. I was machmir in both cases. One, I was machmir because that's the halacha. When I was machmir, because I felt I had to be machmir. What are the 2 cases? So say, "Bami the following." Listen to this: Mahu lalush es ha'isa bechalav. Rabbi says, "It's actually a very interesting halacha. Can you make milchik dough? I'd like to make milchik bread. I'd like to make milchik bread." So Rabbi says, "So do I? Am I permitted to make milchik bread? Upash dulei liisura." And Rabbi says, "The halacha is it is." And Rabbi says, "This is halacha lemaisa. It is usur to make milchik bread." By the way, it's not just dinner milchik bread; it's fleishik bread also. In other words, bread has to be parut. Rabbi says, "You should just know this comes up all of the time unwittingly when people make challah for Shabbos. Often, again, if it's made on the heels of one's Shabbos food preparation, one could technically be making fleishik challah. One is not permitted to go ahead and make fleishik or milchik bread. The reason for that, again, on a very simple level, is because bread, being that it's a food staple, is something that is consumed with both milchik and fleishik meals. Chazal were concerned that if you make your bread of one of the two designations, one may come to inadvertently go ahead and consume bread with the wrong type of food. So this is a very important halacha. Just by the way, this actually has interesting kashrus applications, because you will notice you can buy milchik bread, right? What kind, right? So potato bread is often milchik. Potato bread is often milchik. So see, the halacha is going to be that if there's a special sug of bread that everyone knows is always milchiks or is always fleishiks, then that is going to be permitted. Meaning, if it's something that's yadua, same idea, if you make bread in a particular shape. Okay, anyway, let's get into this. The point is, it's an interesting halacha that a person has to be nizharin. So can I go ahead and, so they're asking literally, I'd like to knead the dough with milk. So can I mamish make a milchik bread? And a papa said, I said, it's asr, kilchasa. And that wasn't me being machmir, that's me just articulating the halacha. This sanyo, ein lashon and seisa b'chalav, you can't knead dough with milk. Vim lash, kol apas kula asur. Now, both of them, very interesting halacha. See, I would have thought like this. Okay, I can't make a milchik bread. But if I did it, what's the halacha? All right, whatever, just eat it. It's kosher. The halacha is no, we'll say it's asura. It's asura. One is not permitted to maintain in their home a milchik bread. Why? Mipnei hergal avera. Hergal avera sounds much more sinister than it actually is. Hergal avera just means at the end of the day I can't do it because, again, halacha lemaisa, I might come to eat it with the wrong meal. Kiyotze bar, but says similarly, ain't tashin es atanar ba'alyo. You can't go ahead, and I guess this must have been done, you can't smear the oven with tail fat. So I guess you wanted to grease the oven. So you can't grease the oven with tail fat because, again, that makes it fleishik. And if you did so, then again, I will say, obviously anything cooked in the oven becomes fleishiks. Then kala pasa sura ad shiyasik asra. You have to kasher the oven. So you can't make mochik bread. You can't make fleishik bread. So Rav Papa said, when they asked me from the yeshiva of Rav Papa Bar Abba, can you make mochik bread? I said that it's asra, but again, that's not being me being machmir. That's the halacha. Vidach, what was the second halacha they asked me? They asked me the other following question. What about going ahead and bringing in two animals into a pen? Min b'she'in amino. Meaning two animals, Rabbi said, let's say a horse and a cow. I don't know, whatever. A horse and a cow. Two different. Rabbi said, understand, to obviously mate a horse and a cow would be problematic. Als kilayim. I can't mate them. That's kilayim. But the question is, can I put them in the same pen together? Rashi says over, it's the second wide line in Rashi, Mo lahachnis lodir, mi havi kemar bia kelayim olo, ad shiocha suba atzmo eivar hazachar v'yachnis. So Rabbi say, if I put them in the same pen, is that called interbreeding? Or Rabbi say, the way often it would happen in interbreeding forms is literally, they would take the male animal and put it into the female animal. So the shayla is, again, everybody agrees that's interbreeding. The shayla is just putting them in the same pen. So they might get to know each other, they might go for a coffee and all to Allah, but you know, whatever they're going to do, you know, the breeding may occur, meaning it may lead to mixed dancing and interbreeding. But, you know, again, but can I put them in the same, can I put them in the same deer? Can I put them in the same corral, in the same pen together? So the Gemara says, and my papa said, I said it was usher. Why? I'm sorry, Dilav Kilchasa. And I said it was usher, even though, again, I was being machmir, even though, again, this is not within the technical letter of the Adam or Shmuel, because Shmuel said, Rabbi Menachem, at Shir Kiderach HaMenachem. Shmuel said, in general, Bosai, by the laws of adultery. So again, Rashi says over here, the Menachem, Me'idin Aleim Ha'idin L'chayvan Misal Malchus, Mishayishkevu Za'azai Kiderach HaMenachem. Bosai, in general, when testifying about adultery, so one need, the Edim need not see the actual maisa bia, but rather, again, as long as they see behaviors that indicate that bia has or will occur, that is enough to go ahead and subject the couple, depending on what the circumstance, either to misa, to malchus. Ubikelayim, but Rabbi say, to be chayi for kelayim for interbreeding, at shiachnis kimekachal bishofferes. Literally, for interbreeding, one is only chayiv. When they actually, literally, it means insert the tube into the applicator, which means, again, I will say, actually facilitate the maisebia between the two animals. So masiv rach achtaboy bar ami ilu nemar behem tchalot arbiya hayisi omer lo yochas adam behema b'shash ola azachar. So says rach achtaboy the following. If the pasuk would have said, behem techalo sarbia, you shall not interbreed your animal. So I would have thought that a person should not hold on to the female animal, hold it in place, as the male mounts it. Talmud lomar kilayim. Therefore, the pasuk says kilayim. Now, what's a kilayim? Now, what does that mean? Michlal dikilayim achiza nami lo. So I'm going to have thought that as what? My achiza hachnosa. To which the Gemara says, no. What does achiza mean in this context? Achiza in this context means hachnosa. That the Torah is telling you that you may not actively facilitate the interbreeding between the animals. Va'amai kar le achiza. So if that's the case, that if the prohibition is actually to insert the male into the female, so why does he use lashon of achiza? Lishna ma'alya. It's just trying to use a nicer lashon. But I will say, it seems to be over here that the halacha ultimately is, that the only prohibition of interbreeding animals is actually to facilitate the insertion of the male into the female in the act of interbreeding. But placing them together in the same corral, or even holding the female still while the male mounts her, is not going to be the prohibition ultimately of interbreeding. Rav Papa nevertheless says that it's usher. He was machmir with it, but on a technical letter of the law, it would not be usher. Amar Rav Yehuda, min b'mino mutar lahachnis kimekachal bishofares, v'afilu mishum pritzusa leka. So this is an interesting case. What about facilitating breeding between regular animals, not interbreeding, two animals of the same species? What is the halacha about facilitating interbreeding between two animals of the same species? So the halacha is, says the Gemara, it is mutter. Now what's the halacha that it should be aser? The Gemara says, v'afilu mishum pritzusa leka. I would have thought about that perhaps, again, it could engender within a person inappropriate thoughts as well, if he's so intimately involved in the breeding of the animals. Kamash on the Gemara says, no, you're permitted to do it. Why? My taima ba'avidita tarid. But it's actually interesting halacha. Why? Because since a person is pretty much preoccupied with his work, in other words, that he's doing this again as a form of his work, as a form of his avoda. Therefore, again, we assume he has no inappropriate thoughts as a result. Masiv Rav Achtaboy bar Ami, Rav Achtaboy bar Ami raised the kasha, Amud Beis, Ilu, Ne'emar, Behem Techolo Sabio. Had the pasuk just said, your animal, you shall not interbreed. Hayisi Omer lo yochas adam es habehima kidei sheyale aleha zohar. I might have thought that a person cannot hold the female still while the male mounts it by interbreeding. Talmud lomar kilayim. Therefore, the pasuk says kilayim. Kilayim uda aser ha min b'mino shari. Well, it's only by kilayim that this is aser, but by animals of the same species, it'll be permitted. Or min b'mino nami achize nachnasalo. Or maybe you'll say even by min b'mino, you can hold the female still, but you can't actually facilitate putting the male into the female. The Gemara says, "Lo, my achiza hachnasa." No, by min b'mino abosai, one can actually facilitate active breeding. So why do we call this achiza? In other words, achiza means holding the female still while the male mounts it. If that's the fact that I can actually facilitate the actual insertion of the male into the female, why does he use the lashon of achiza? To which the Gemara says, lishna ma'alya omer, lishna ma'alya. Right? So ultimately, again, the Gemara is just using a nicer lashon. Omer of Ashi, ha milsa ba'minei dirapa, ha milsa ba'minei debei Rav Nechemya, reish kalusa. So Rav Ashi said, I asked the following kasha from Rav Nechemya, the reish kalusa. Ma'u lahachnis min umino v'she'eno mino ladir. So we'll say, remember again, here's what we have so far. Before Rav Papa said that the halacha is that one should not go ahead and place min she'eno mino in a pen together. That's how we paskin. We paskin halacha l'maisa that one not only is it obviously prohibited to actively mate, actively interbreed, but one shouldn't even go ahead and put two animals of different species, male and female, in the same close quarters together, because there's an understanding ultimately again of what is going to occur, and one will be in violation of interbreeding. Again, that is not prohibited d'oraisa, as we've seen. That's the chumrah of Rav Papa midrabanan. Fine. Now the Gemara follows up on that question, asks an interesting question. What about putting the following? What about going ahead and putting min umino v'she'eno min aladir? So let's say, so imagine the following situation. Let's say you put a horse, a female horse, and what do you call a female horse?
A mare.
Right? A horse, a mare, and a cow. Right? A cow is female, right? And a cow in the pen together. So in other words, we'll say in this case, the male horse has its own min to mate with, but also has she'eno mino, something not of its min. So we just said before that Rapapa was machmir and said, one should not put a male and female, even of different species, together in the pen. What about over here in this case where the male has its own min to mate with, but there's a female of another min to mate with? What's the status of that situation? Do we say kevan diika minei basa minei gar? Do we say that since the horse has its own species to mate with, it's going to mate with its own species? O dilma afilu hachi lo. Or maybe we say no, that even in that context, still you shouldn't go ahead and put a female of another species there. O pashti lohu liisura delo kilchasa. And the answer was the Reish Kalusa said it is aser. Both said delo kilchasa. Ultimately means it's aser. But not because it's technically usher. It's usher because we're being machmir in this case. Mishum pritzusa da'avdi. And we'll say, what's the reason for that? Now, mishum pritzusa da'avdi means because we're concerned about the immorality of the slaves. What does it mean, Abul Sayyid? That if you have a situation like this, where you have a male and female of different species, even though the female of the same species is there, at the end of the day, we're concerned that the servants may not be meticulous in the halacha and may end up what? May end up going ahead and actively interbreeding the min b'she'eno mino together. So therefore, again, we're machmir over here because of what? Because we're afraid of what the slaves, who are not very scrupulous people, may end up doing. Fine. Says the Mishnah. We'll say now back to Poland, away from interbreeding a little bit, and back to the Poland. Says the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. Hayo ose biyadav. So we'll define what this means in just a little bit. If the workers, so remember, we're still back to the entitlement of workers to consume produce. So if the worker was working with his hands, but not with his feet, or he was working with his feet, but not with his hands, or afilu b'kseifo, or he wasn't working with his hands or with his feet, but rather, again, he was working with his shoulder. The halacha is harei za'ochel. This worker is still entitled to go ahead and partake of the produce of the field. We'll say, what does this mean? What this means is the following, that even if the worker is not using his entire body in the service of the employer, he still has an entitlement, bless you, to go ahead and consume the produce. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Omer, Ad Shiasa Biyodov Ubiraglov. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says that no, he's only entitled to eat when he works Biyodov Ubiraglov, when he ultimately works with his hands and with his feet. Says the Gemara, my taima, what's the reason for this? My taima, Kisavo Bekem Reacha, Bechol Madda Ovid. So we'll say, because again, whatever the type of labor that I'm engaged in, whether it's labor that requires my feet, I also remember again, your feet would be, let's say you're crushing grapes, right? Your hands would be, you're picking grapes off the vines. Shoulder, we're going to discuss, you're carrying a load. Whatever it is that I'm doing, as long as I'm in the employ of my employer, then lamaisa, again, I have an entitlement to go ahead and consume the produce of the field while I'm harvesting. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Ad Shiaseh Biyodov Ubiraglov. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you all can only eat if you're actively working with your hands and with your feet. My time, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, what's Rabbi Yehuda's logic? Ki shar. Because he says, a worker is like a shar. Ma shar Ad Shiaseh Biyodov Ubiraglov. We'll say, just like a shar, when it works, uses its hands and its feet. Now, what does he mean, he uses his hands and his feet? It uses its hind legs and its forelegs. Af poel at shiasa biyadav raglav. So we'll say, so to a worker is only going to what? So to a worker is only going to go ahead and be entitled to eat if he uses his hands and his feet in working the field. Boy, Rabbi Barafuna. So Rabbi Barafuna asked the following kach. We'll say, listen to this case. Dosh ba'obzin v'tarnagolim. So what happens, Rabbi Osai? I am employing a different kind of workforce. Instead of oxen, I use chickens and geese. I use chickens and geese to go ahead and thresh my grain. So listen to this. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, mahu. So we'll say, what is the halacha of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda? Because remember, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says that a worker, and they will say whether this is a worker, whether this worker is a person or an animal, is only permitted to go ahead and consume produce in the field when it's working with his hands and its feet. Let's say I employ chickens and geese. We'll say, what's the chap of chickens and geese? Right? They only have two legs, right? They don't have hind legs and four legs. They only have one set of legs. So the shiloh over here is, because they're only threshing with two legs, so do they get the benefit of eating that which they thresh, or do I have the right to muzzle them? So what do we say? Mau, b'chol kocho ba'ina v'ha'ika. So do we say, what's most important is that the animal threshes with all of its koach, and that is true over here. I mean, even though they only have two legs, they're giving it their all. Is called kocha, and therefore again they're permitted to eat. Oh, Dilma, biyadav uberaglav, but you know, vahaleka. Or maybe no, you need an animal. The only type of animal that is entitled to partake of the threshing is what? An animal that works with its hind legs and forelegs, and that is not the case over here, to which the Gemara says, teku. To which the Gemara says, we're not sure. So we'll say, so wait to thresh with geese and chickens until Eliyahu Navi comes, right? Otherwise, again, err on the side of caution and allow them to eat. Amr Nachman, we'll say, that would be the halach in a case like this, where there would be a take about what to do, we would allow, ultimately, again, the animals to eat. Says Amr Nachman, Amr Barabua, Polim, Achlo Hilchu Shasi V'arev Begat, Ochlin Anoven Vein Shosin Yayin. Well, it's interesting halacha. Workers, until they have worked, now Shesi Va'arev literally means the length and breadth of the field, they are permitted to eat grapes, but they are not permitted to drink wine. Now, what does this mean? So you could have the following situation. You could have workers, who are doing double time. Double time, what they're doing is they're picking grapes, but also as they move along and they pick grapes, they're also stomping on the grapes and creating wine. Right? You can imagine this. Well, let's say, again, they're doing, you know, they're walking on boards, and all the grapes are on the ground as well, and as they're walking, the juice drains. So the halacha is the following. They can eat grapes as soon as they're walking, but they can't drink wine until they go the length and the breadth of the vineyard. The reason for that is because if they start to drink wine earlier, their work regarding the wine is not yet recognizable. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, Achelo Hilchu. It's actually the third line from the Tzav. Achelo Hilchu. Darkan lahatil anovim al gat. V'darkan baragleim al agat. V'achelo Hilchu ba shesi v'arev Ein melachto nikaris b'yayin ela ba'anovim. Lefichach ein shosin yayin dehavilei oseh b'minzeh. So we'll say the issue over here is a worker is only permitted to partake of a particular item if it's clear that they're working with that item. It only becomes clear that the worker is producing wine when he walks the length and the breadth ultimately again of the threshing floor, of the wine press. But before he walks the length and the breadth, he is not permitted to go ahead and partake of the wine. The Megara goes weiter. But once he goes in and walks the length and the breadth, ultimately of the threshing floor, then he can go ahead and partake of the wine as well. We have another 3 minutes. Let's just start the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. We'll say now we get into another very important halacha, which is that a worker is only permitted to partake of the particular type of produce that's what? That he is actively working with. But if he's working with one type of produce, he is not permitted to consume another type of produce. So it says the Mishnah the following. If the worker was working with figs, he can't eat from grapes. Ba'anavim lo yochal te'inim. If he was working with grapes, he can't eat with figs. Aval monea es atzmo ad shemagia lemakom yafos. Our Rabbi say, what can he do? If I'm working with grapes, and I know that what? The good grapes are, you know, in the third vine over, then I could actively choose to go ahead. Wait to eat. I could actively choose to go ahead and wait until I get to a nicer part of the vine to dafka eat. This is very important. Now, under normal circumstances, we say that a worker only has the right to go ahead and consume produce when he's actively working. Now, the Mishnah introduces us something very interesting. So on one hand, on a technical level, as we just said before, so two things the Mishnah is teaching us. Number one, a poel only has the right to consume produce of the type of with which he's currently working. So if he's working with grapes, he could eat from grapes. If he's working with figs, he could eat from figs. But if he's working with grapes, he cannot consume from figs. That's number one. Number two, he can only work b'shas melacha. He can only eat b'shas melacha. He can only consume the produce at the time that he's actively working with the produce. But now the Mishnah introduces us something very interesting, which is Ava Mishum Hashav Aveda. Now, both sides, we've seen this concept before. Hashav Aveda means that, however, the Chazal said that in order to go ahead and stave off the loss of the Bala Bayis, we allow the poel to do certain things which, according to the technical letter of law, he really should not be doing. So, for example, in order to go ahead and save a loss for the Bayilim, Amru, Poelin Ochlin, Bali Chasan Me Uman Lu Uman. So the poelim, the workers, are permitted to go ahead and eat from Uman to Uman. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Amru poelim Ochlin Bali Chasan Uman Lu Uman. Kishagamru Shirazu, Baholchim Haskel Bechaverta. So this is a very interesting case. I'm a worker. I'm working for Reuven. I'm picking grapes. So what's the halacha? When I'm picking the grapes, what am I allowed to do? Eat grapes, right? Not only that, if I know the better grapes are at the end of the vine, what am I permitted to do? Wait to get to the better grapes. But listen to the following. I'm picking multiple rows of vines. Now what happens? Let's say, for argument's sake, there's 30 seconds, let's say there's 1 minute, that it takes me to walk from row A to row B. Am I permitted to eat grapes during that 1 minute walk? On a technical level, what would you say?
No.
Why? Because it's not Shas Melacha, to which the Mishnah says, but we're going to allow you to eat grapes then. Why? Because that's in the best interest of the Balabayas to have you eat grapes then. Why? Because that's dead time, so to speak, anyway. Meaning nothing's happening during that walking time. So even though it's not technical Shas Melacha, I will say, Na'ai, why isn't walking from one vine to the next called Melacha as well? We'll discuss that. But the idea over here is, even though it's not active Shas Melacha, we're going to allow you to go ahead and consume the peros during that time. So also we'll finish the Mishnah. ubechamer kishiparakas. Similarly, again, when you're coming back from the wine press, even though, again, on a technical level, this once again should not be shas malacha, we're going to allow you to eat it then as well as by the chamor, by the donkey, when you are unloading it. We'll say, I'll record a little bit more of the shir a little bit later today, but we'll stop over here. All right, shkoyach. So I say, so it's really, we're not going to waste any.